Welcome, everyone, to FantasticGeek.com's Pop Culture Podcast. My name is Matt, and piloting us on this wonderful ride home, piloting the USS car, is Pete. Hello, Pete.
Hello, everybody.
So we literally pulled out about 15 minutes ago from what is known by a couple names, the Star Trek The Official Convention, or something like that. It's a weirdly placed the. In the Philadelphia area, held in Cherry Hill, New Jersey, with the hashtag TrekNJ, which I don't know if they're trying to pull away from Philly. Pete, we went on the third day of it, the Sunday, 3 days of memories and stardust dreams. And Pete, I think we basically have four acts to our drive home discussion, and we're going to go in reverse order, the old upside down pyramid, if you will. First up was, last on our schedule, but first up for our discussion was hearing Nichelle Nichols, TV's Uhura, speak to a packed room. Next, we will talk about hearing Robert Beltran, Chakotay, of Voyager. Then we had two Klingons in full makeup, Robert O'Reilly as Gowron, also playing Robert O'Reilly, and then J.G. Hertzler, Mayor Hertzler to some, who played, of course, General Martok on Deep Space Nine, and also was occasionally on stage today as J.G. Hertzler. And lastly, we start with the first thing we saw today, which was Robert Picardo, the Doctor. You might say, Doctor Who? No. The Doctor on Star Trek Voyager. Pete, let's start with someone who, questioner and commenter, one after another, got up to say to Ms. Nichelle Nichols, calling her an icon, someone who changed America, what were some of the highlights, the positives from her hour-long talk?
Well, first off, we're talking about a pioneer, you know, not just in the role that she originated on Star Trek in the late 1960s at a crucial time during the civil rights movement, but somebody who was part of the first interracial kiss on television, as she later put the story when somebody asked her, you know, Captain Kirk, you kissed Captain Kirk? No. I let him kiss me. was great. Luminous at 81 years young, and just really a special lady. So grateful that I got to see her. A lot of questions about her very famous and much ballyhooed audience with Dr. Martin Luther King. During the civil rights movement, at a time when she...
I had the rare honor of meeting Dr. Martin Luther King, who I was like, you know, he's my leader of the world. So I was really nervous about, you know, and we shook hands, and he starts telling me all about Star Trek and how important it is to the world and blah, 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 blah. And I'm going, and he said, and your role is so important because, and I'm going, really? And I'm so happy that he felt that way about it, how nice. And then I said, well, I'm going to really miss my fellow actors. And he looked at me like that, and I said, because I've just landed a role on Broadway, and I'm going, he said, you cannot. And I almost said, what you talking about, Dr. Martin? But I was wise enough not to. And he said, don't you know who you are? And I said, yes, I'm Bishop Nichols, and I'm, you know, and I am trying to explain to him that it's very nice to be on television and on, you know, the movie, but I'm from the theater, and all my life I wanted to do nothing but star on Broadway. And he said, that's very nice, but millions of people would see you on television. and this is a very important role, and you're going to take it.
Initiate that first contact between species. What a symbolic role. What a great lady.
Yeah, it was a wonderful hour to hear her speak. I think it would be only fair to also call it, I know for me, and I'm sure for you, a slightly bittersweet hour. At 81, we should all hope to be as luminescent as Nichelle Nichols, but definitely her light has faded a bit. There were a couple times where there'd be a question on one topic, and partway through it would switch back to repeating the answer from the previous question. And I don't bring that up to be disrespectful in any way. I think it was, to me, it almost added a certain emotional potency, just as a reminder that these people who we see, these icons, whether they're just actors, and there was a questioner online who said, you know, Bill Shatner might have stolen a lot of the good lines, but at the end of the day, he's an actor. You, Nichelle Nichols, and George Takei, you're icons who changed the country. But I think it's a reminder that those icons, you know, time will take them as it will take us all. I know we don't want to spend a ton of time on that, Pete, but I think it is important to acknowledge that you know, at 81, she had these wonderful stories, and I felt like there were these flashes of just, oh my goodness, she hasn't changed in 50 years. And then there were moments where it was just kind of, you know, a little bit of that behavior that, you know, we've all seen in older folks from time to time.
Yes, and she had a helper on stage there in Richard...
Richard Arnold, who I know he was connected to Gene Roddenberry mm-hmm. in many ways. I don't know if it was kind of an assistant.
Yeah, for many, many years. They bill him as a Trexpert, you know, having spent so much time, you know, helping to manage Gene's affairs. And I know he was close with Major Barrett Roddenberry before she passed away as well. I mean, listen, on Nichelle Nichols and, you know, her memory as an 81-year-old woman. I mean, I just hope to have as many stories as she does at the end of hopefully a long life. You know, this is a woman who has done it all. She's had private audiences with the president, with Martin Luther King, okay, telling her story, recounting that she got the role of Uhura. And
Gene Roddenberry said, "You can tell her now, she's got it." And I did. And I didn't know Gene Roddenberry from Battles, you know. And it was some up in the back that said that, "You can tell her now, she's got it." And I went like that, and I said, "Well, it looks like you've got it." And I said, "Who?
History in the making as that happened, and you know, the story she told later on about Whoopi Goldberg, and you know, Whoopi having seen Nichelle Nichols on her TV when she was little, and you know, there's a black woman on TV who is not a maid, who's in a position of authority, and you know, that in the future there will be blacks in such positions. The empowering nature of it, I think, was very, very important and vital, and you really can't hear it enough.
I think that there were times that Nichelle Nichols would come to a pause in what she was saying, having ruminated on the topic for a little bit, and I think the audience would just will applause to say, she has said all that she needs to say on that topic. She kind of doesn't know that she's looking for that she has completed it. And I think there was really a wonderful, I got a wonderful sense from the audience that the audience recognized that these stories were precious, and there were a couple times that she needed help, and the audience was patient if there was a repeat, or the audience was prepared to say, "What a fantastic story. let's applause, and she would smile and nod and then be ready for the next question. I think that the addition of Richard Arnold there was a real bonus. We've kind of seen him around on the periphery at some of these before, where he'll have his own panel, and I've kind of taken it that when he'll have his moment there, it's usually kind of like in between the two stars that you want to see. So he's kind of like the warm-up act, or like the seventh inning stretch, or you know, the halftime show, that sort of thing. But I mean, he made the difference where he would reword a question for her, and he kind of would take his mic away from his mouth. So obviously we would see it going on, but there was a dignity to the help that he was giving. And I guess to return to the highest of highs there, I mean, such wonderful stories. One that I did not know was that NASA had reached out to her. She said in the 70s, although I think, you know, the shuttle program was fully in the, you know, kind of ensconced in the 80s.
Yes, but, well, really twofold. I mean, they got it going in the 70s, and actually most of the actors were present when they rolled out the first space shuttle Enterprise in the late 70s. So I think there's that part, but she had been recruited, or was asked to help recruit, more accurately, female and minority astronauts. And she was very, very passionate that that be done under the auspices of her own company. You know, not that this is an entertainment thing or anything like that, but as she put it, it was history and very, very vital. And there was person who asked a question later on and referenced the Challenger mission in 1986, and I thought he was going to reference the fact that Star Trek paid tribute to them and those fallen astronauts. Later that year, they put a little card in front of the credits before Star Trek The Voyage Home about, you know, their passing and their place in history. But he said, you know, just looking at the astronauts that were on that mission, you know, and you had an African-American, and you had, I mean, at least one woman that I'm recalling, Christy McAuliffe, off the top of my head, there may have been more. There was an Asian gentleman. So, you know, that was the dream 20 years later, and it was actuality. Very, very important. I mean, Matt, you made the comparison to Rosa Parks, and I don't feel that is any way, you know, overreaching in light of what Miss Nichols has done in her life.
Yeah, I had heard that mentioned kind of out in the hall before it, saying, you know, she's like a real, she's like a living Rosa Parks, someone had said. And I initially was like, well, she's done these great things, Nichelle Nichols has, but, it, you know, is it a lesser thing? And honestly, from hearing the outpouring of people who made comments to her today and hearing her own stories, I think that it's just, I mean, obviously the two are somewhat different, and the Rosa Parks story deserves to take precedence. But the notion of both being a symbol and being, Rosa Parks being a symbol of the need for change, and Nichelle Nichols / Uhura being a symbol for the normalcy of what could be, I think really was, it does make the comparison fitting. It's apples and oranges, and how the job that each needed to do, but the outcome is the same, which is this profound, profound change, which person after person of, you know, every shade and both gender, et cetera, kept repeating to her, was this notion that they had impacted that speaker's life in a similar way. And it really was, it was moving to hear those people say that. And I think when you and I walked out, we were both kind of quiet, because she had this wonderful message, and this message of continue to stay interested in the world around you, to answer those questions,
to wonder,
and the responsibility that we have to make the children around us wonder and not let them get complacent. And it was a wonderful, wonderful message. Again, made slightly bittersweet by you know, the slightly dimming light, within her, but just a wonderful and a sweet and a heartfelt message, and one that, well, I'll just repeat what I said earlier, there were just these moments where you'd look at her up on the screen. We were towards the back, so that was the best view we could get. You just kind of look up at her on the screen and say, her face is the same as it was 50 years ago. You know, there's the hair is white, but it's the same energy and the same personality. Particularly so when someone asked her about NASA, that I felt like there was a surge of energy within her. Just a wonderful, wonderful experience to have been in her presence.
And not putting on the airs too, you know, the story she mentioned a couple times about Zoe Saldana having been cast to play Uhura in the rebooted movies. And, you know, finding out from a friend that they had cast another actress in the same role before people really knew, well, what are they doing with them? That kind of thing. And just the down-to-earth nature with which she invited Saldana to her home and how gracious she was to receive that younger actress and how overwhelmed Saldana was to meet her. And didn't even really believe that she had reached out to her. And again, the down-to-earth nature that, you know, well, you know, there's going to be other actors who will play the same role. It's show business. That's what it is. You know, and calling it what it is, you know, this woman has a true sense of perspective for everything that she's been through and brushed up against, which I dare say is a lot.
And I think perhaps a fitting end cap to that would be one more anecdote that she shared. And towards the end of the anecdote, she did kind of slide back to it to a previous story. So if the facts here are incorrect, it's through my misunderstanding. But she referenced having been invited to the White House, meeting President Obama. And if I understood the gist of it properly, they were meeting somewhere at the White House, and then she said, you know, I'd like to see the Oval Office. She said that to the President of the United States, who said, well, I think we can arrange that. So she at the age of, Richard Arnold said it was a couple years ago, so she in her late 70s was somebody who had enough passion and vivacity to say, welcome, Mr. President, welcome, historical president, so on and so forth. Can I have more? Can I have the White House, please? can I see the Oval Office, please? So I think a lesson for us all there.
The bridge of the nation, if you will. She went there. I don't know whether she used the phone, but you know what? I'm pretty sure that Barack Obama would not have objected. And, you know, Obama, you know, widely known as a Trekkie, you know, somebody who has referenced the importance of science fiction, particularly Nichelle Nichols' role in science fiction, as, you know, something that helped push him towards his dreams. So, you know, just so glad I got to see this this lady speak, and really, really pleased about that.
Someone who was happy and vivacious and gracious to be with us, even though it was we thousand plus, who were the ones honored to be in her presence.
You mean, Matt, by comparison, there were not other people who were happy, gracious to be with us today?
We had in Robert Beltran somebody who I think it is safe to say does not fully appreciate the fact that he has had a long career in show business playing a variety of parts, including being a series regular for 7 years and about 120 episodes of Star Trek Voyager. Is that safe to say?
Oh, undoubtedly. And, you know, I tried to prepare you, Matt, that he is not really enamored of the way in which he has gained his stardom, particularly given his role on this show. And you were a little incredulous. You didn't really believe me. I had asked you before how long until you know, he takes questions. We theorized maybe 15 minutes. Within 2.5 minutes of his very awkward first steps on stage,
Oh, well, if I may interrupt, his awkward first steps, which included references to the disaster and the disaster caused by Hurricane Sandy,
yes,
and the recent wildfires that have been in central New Jersey.
Yes.
Not that the wildfires have been tremendously damaging. I mean, I believe it's minimal property damage, but scary nonetheless. And in the last week or two, there have been maybe four or five serious wildfires. He basically opens with a wildfire and Hurricane Sandy joke. Are all of you in New Jersey okay between getting washed away and burned down? Then, yes, 2 minutes into that.
Ba-dum-bum.
No more opening remarks. No more let me tell you a story, kids. Straight to the questions.
Yes, it was ham-fisted. It was awkward. And I have on my phone the number of shots that he took at both the TV show that is the reason why he was there and the people that were paying to see him.
Probably the top of that would be somebody said, how often do you get together with the whole cast? Which, what do we want to hear? We want to hear, obviously we want to hear something truthful, but you want to hear, oh, we're not together as often as we'd like, but we keep in touch, and there's the Christmas cards, and I saw this one in the play. He goes, well, us guys get together fairly often. We go to a restaurant. Usually we get kicked out. Ha, ha, ha. It's all a great little anecdote. He goes, now the ladies don't come. If any of the three of those ladies came, well, they would just take control of everything. So can you imagine more than one or all three? Or then if we included Jennifer Lean, who played Kes, who, by the way, left acting to become a wife and mother and live that life. Having been a successful actress for close to 10 years in Hollywood in her teens and 20s. Then it would just... Can you imagine it? There was a weird feeling in the audience that you wanted to laugh at his applause lines, but it was like a nervous laughter of like, this guy isn't on our side. He's not... Just tell us the freaking story of the time, you know, you were filming the swamp pits and you fell in the liquid goo and you had to go take a shower and get styrofoam out of your eye. Tell us that. Don't be ungrateful.
He didn't bite the hand that feeds him, Matt. He consumed it. And I'm pretty sure he then spat it back up and ate it again. It was pretty bad. Was I mean there?
No, not at all.
No, that was what he said in this thing. Remember?
Yeah, oh.
Was I mean?
He
knew exactly what he was doing.
And I think he's somebody who has gotten away with the reputation of... I think he believes, or he tells people, I have a snarky reputation, or snarky sense of humor. Therefore, when he says something which is biting and mean, he'll just smile. And he has a fantastic, boyish smile. It's a smile of, like, you know... Oops, I didn't know that I couldn't bring a mud pie inside to give it to you as a present, Dad. It's that kind of smile. But he's flashing it at the age of 60, having just said some unkind thing or some not nice thing or some grumpy thing. It was a bizarre experience.
Yeah. So let's do some hits here, Matt. What did Voyager do well?
He said...
Thank you. Cast a woman as the captain. How about that? Right? So they cast Janeway, you know, which was a great move. And then, let's see. Yeah, that was about the best thing they could have done.
Oh, the best thing we did was go off the air. Oh, wait, let me circle back. We had a woman captain.
Yeah.
Okay.
He also, somebody said, did you watch Star Trek ahead of time? He started with a joke of saying, yes.
I was a fan of the original series, which starred, and people don't know this, Soupy Sales as the captain. It lasted 3 episodes.
Then he said, no, well, my choices in the late 60s when, were, what was it, Bonanza, Dick Van Dyke, and this show with the pointy ears and the mustard shirts. So, of course, I went for Dick Van Dyke.
Must be why he developed his impeccable comedic timing that I've seen in a lot of his roles.
It was, I don't know, it was just bizarre. I mean, he told one story about the writers taking him out, and he hates sushi, but they went to a sushi restaurant. To which I'm like thinking, like, I don't know. Like, don't you think you'd... At what point do you speak up and say, guys, I'm not really a sushi fan. Can we go somewhere else?
And then how about saying, and here's the tab, and I'll see you later.
Yeah. And then walks back in to confirm. Because it was they were going through different things that they could have Chakotay do. And it was like... I don't remember what the first one was, but the second one... Oh, it was a baseball...
Well, he said he wanted to do baseball, but they ultimately settled on boxing. And then he told a very long-winded and really kind of bitter story about how, all right, well, you know, let me know when I need to start training to be a boxer. And basically he was given days when they finally were going to do that storyline. And he said, all right, well, I'm not going to appear bare-shirted. I'm going to wear a T-shirt. And they didn't have a T-shirt for him on set. And it became a whole painful thing.
Hearing you retell that story, do you think that the producers... Because, look, if he was a bug like this at work, do you think they were like, hey, we wanted to touch base with all the actors, particularly, I think, there was at a time when maybe Jerry Taylor left the show and Brandon Braga had a bigger role. So, hey, we want to touch base with all the actors, see what they're up to with their characters, so on and so forth. And just basically were like, this guy is a real pill. We're going to give him what he wants, but no warning. And then he wants a shirt. We're going to, oh, fine. We're just not going to tell anybody. We're not going to tell wardrobe. We're not going to tell the director. We're not going to tell anybody because too bad, so sad, you jerk. Like, do you think that that's possible?
He repeatedly referenced that this cadre of writers was afraid of him. And I don't know whether that was bravado or that was character or whether that was reality. You know, Brandon Braga was the showrunner. Rick Berman was the executive producer of Star Trek the entirety of the time he was with the show. And, you know, no, Ron Moore was brought up by Robert Picardo, so we're not talking about Ronald Moore. But just, I don't know, man, the unctuous way in which this guy presented himself and you know, I had prepped you with the idea that people would boo and hiss, and to their credit, they did not. But they really wouldn't have been wrong to.
I think the fact that this particular convention that Creation puts on, it is in a smaller venue, so I think that the way, I don't know, whatever your favorite sports team is, when their arch rivals come into town, if you're in the stadium, you'll boo with tens of thousands of other people, but if the, you know, quarterback, all-star, whoever from that team walks into your, you know, neighborhood restaurant while you're in there, you're not going to boo. You're going to say, you know, hello, sir, how are you? Like, it's just a certain sense of decorum in a smaller bunch. He did share one other story where he was in the running for the role of a Klingon captain in Star Trek III, which I thought was going to conclude with...
I don't think it was Star Trek III. He mentioned in 1989, he said it was the second or third movie that Leonard Nimoy did.
Again, well, Leonard Nimoy only did two.
I know, and not really trusting, you know, a guy who is ungrateful for his time on Star Trek and really a lot of the things he's been in Hollywood to begin with. I don't really trust his memory. I'm wondering if it may have been because Leonard Nimoy had an executive presence for Star Trek VI, that it might have been one of those roles. That's beside the point. He goes in for the audition. He doesn't know what a Klingon is. You know, Leonard Nimoy, rightfully so, kind of gives him a hard time. Like, well, you know, why would you audition for this part not knowing it? He made a lot of hay that the audition was at Leonard Nimoy's house. walks out a patio. He sees a friend.
After having given, like, Leonard Nimoy kind of gave him an attitude, like, shall we start to read?
Yes.
And Beltran says, yes, we shall start to read. Like, he gives him the same attitude back. Veteran actor, director of multiple films, he's giving an attitude.
Yeah. It's amazing it didn't end there. So, of course, he's... And, I mean, as far as his life is concerned, I mean, just don't give Leonard Nimoy...
Vulcan death grip, man.
So gracious and skilled as an actor and a director and, you know, within the Hollywood system, you know, that kind of grief. But he steps outside on the patio and he sees a friend and says, oh, you know, they asked me what a Klingon was and I don't know. And, you know, well, he had earlier cursed and realized there were some children in the audience and corrected his story by saying, well, F the Klingons, F Star Trek, and F Leonard Nimoy. And basically, that was the encapsulating moment for me of Robert Beltran.
Yeah, that story concluded with the friend basically turns mortified because the screen door is open and the entire table of producers and producer types are watching. And it was just this feeling that Robert Beltran is a guy who has a temper, a guy who is angry, and, you know, I mean, look, there are plenty of fine actors who never made it financially. I don't mean house in the hills. I just mean, like, there are plenty of talented people who never were able to stay in Hollywood long enough to have some sort of career here and there because it just never hit and the money ran out, etc. His 7 years on Voyager, look, is Voyager the best written of the Star Trek series? No. Was his character one that received the best writing, the writing that perhaps it should have? No. You know what? Being the commander, being the executive officer, it's a tough role because you need to be the square-jawed, you know, kind of dad to everybody else's craziness. It's also a job. There's a dignity in doing your craft. And he did his craft for so long, and going out and going to these weird different spots and saying, today we're shooting something in the mountains. Oh man, today we're doing some green screen thing. Can you imagine back in the day if Charlie Chaplin had green screen, if Orson Welles had green screen, you know, just like to be in the middle of that machine. And it was just kind of angry.
Yeah, I mean, I think the thing I came away with is that this man either really doesn't know or pretends not to know his audience. So we tell the Leonard Nimoy story and as if he was really unaware that the screen door was open and that people could hear him, apart from giving Nimoy guff before that. And then he's got somebody who asked him a question dressed as either Leonard Nimoy or Tuvok the Vulcan in the ceremonial Vulcan garb there. And he says to this guy, what do you have on? And then later he says, let's lock the doors. Okay? So he really, he doesn't seem to want to get his audience.
And that particular gentleman who was dressed in the Vulcan garb is somebody who's been at every one of these conventions. I don't think that man is 100% all there in the head, but... You know what? If there's one message of Star Trek, it's to include everybody.
He asked a question of Nichelle Nichols, and what was the first thing she said? She complimented him on his outfit there. Yep. Not that people go to this so that if they're dressed up, if they're cosplaying, that the actors can notice. But you know what? You don't say, oh, God, what do you have on? And those shoes, Jesus. No, you don't pull a Johnny from Airplane. You're magnanimous. Okay, and, you know, maybe Robert Beltran stuck around and saw how it was done. I'm guessing no. All I know was that was a long 54 minutes, and yes, I timed it.
Yeah, I mean, I feel that I am somebody who has not seen every episode of Voyager. I was not a consistent watcher of it at all when it was originally on. I, you know, was... ages 7 to 14 when Next Generation was on. That was my wheelhouse. Deep Space Nine felt kind of different. Voyager felt initially great, and then just like, this isn't my kind of Star Trek. Rightly or wrongly, I've seen, I think, maybe all but the last two seasons is where I'm at now. Thanks, Netflix. And I'm enjoying it for what it is. It is different, and I was a kid and should have appreciated it more, and blah, blah, blah. But, you know, it is somewhat unique in its flavor, but I don't know. I just return to, you know, how many people would kill to have had Robert Beltran's career? You know, bottom line.
To hear him say, you know, and obviously it's tongue-in-cheek, but, you know, early on in the show's run, oh, we're on the bridge, I'm in this scene, I'm in this scene, I'm in this scene, and later on to be saying, oh, there's a bridge scene in this episode, I'm on that. I was really kind of hoping for 6 of the next 7 days off. You know, he doesn't come across likable. And the analogy I drew before we saw him is, you know, this was like a wrestling convention, and maybe the promoter felt they needed a bad guy. Well, guess what? They got it. But at least the child hugged the bad guy at the end.
Yeah. That was nice. He was good with the people who were questioning. In fact, I believe that was the child of our pal on Twitter, at Dr. Wells at ESU. Is that the name?
Yes. East Stroudsburg University.
East Stroudsburg University, indeed. So it was good to see Dr. Wells' son was treated the way all kids at these conventions should be treated, which is with that little extra bit of acknowledgement that this kid wasn't alive for most of your career, let alone for when the show was on. This kid is starry-eyed to meet you, and he seemed genuine with that kid. He referenced that at age 60, he has a 3-year-old daughter, and he kind of was almost in a very friendly parental way, friendly to this kid who is probably 3 or 4, maybe not quite 5, kind of grilling him in that fatherly way of, you know, I have a daughter, she's about your age, you know, you seem like a nice young man. You know, it was that kind of, you know, it was playful, but it was fun, and it was appropriate. Gave him a big hug. So, I guess as you say, the villain of today's story ends with a little heart of gold at the end.
Exactly. Let's talk about the sidekicks.
The Klingons, yes. In what was an interesting choice that I'm still not sure how I feel about, Robert Riley, who played Gowron in Next Generation and Deep Space Nine, kind of a recurring guest role, and J.G. Hertzler, who played General Martok in Deep Space Nine, were on stage together. They referenced a couple of things right off the bat. They referenced having become friends doing conventions for the last 15 years or so. And then they also referenced that in 15 years, they haven't had an act, and they still don't have an act while they're on stage. And Pete, while it wasn't bad, and I'll reference the Benson line in a moment. While it wasn't bad, I was just sitting here going, oh my goodness. Pete and I do these podcasts for fun, and we have more rapport and more feed off each other than these two guys who are professional and successful actors and who have been around for decades more than us just in life, where you can, you know, you start a sentence and I'll finish it, that kind of thing.
Yeah, I mean, I was kind of looking forward to that one the most, only because I really like what they did with their characters, and, you know, they ham it up and the whole thing, and the idea that they would be appearing on stage, the way the schedule put it, was simply in makeup. They had the full-on outfits and everything, and pretty legitimate to their, you know, on-screen personas. The thing that hit me right off the bat is, wow, we had to put the teeth in and make them a little hard to hear.
Yeah, that was not the way to go. I would have been better, no teeth, because, you know, you're not going to see the teeth past the first 5 rows. And there was a couple times where I was like, oh man, am I getting old where I can't hear? And I just kind of look around and be like, I just see a bunch of people kind of necks craned, leaning forward a bit. But I'd say at the end of the day, it was all good fun.
It was. They were cute. Hetzler recently has been elected in Ulysses, New York. And it was a great question about, you know, your character had been a general and then became a politician, becoming the chancellor at the end of the Dominion War on Deep Space Nine, and now you're a politician, you know, what's that been like? That was cute. Star Trek fans are tremendously well-informed. You know, Beltran referenced that later on when he was asked about his new movie coming out, and he was explaining that the movie hasn't even been shot yet and might not be shot, partially given to the condition of his career right now and that he's not really putting fannies in the seats, apart from his snarkiness. But you know, they were fun. It could have been better, could have been worse.
Yeah, they could have been more polished. And I feel like, to return back to Beltran just for a second, they give these people an hour, generally. And I feel like, how do I put this? The level of confidence that the person on stage has in their own ability to hold the room for an hour is related to how long they speak before they take questions.
Yes.
You can have panels... Or similarly, to kind of look at like a more of a larger Comic-Con thing, you can have a panel where it's 15 minutes of questions and you screen a 40-minute episode, or you can have an hour of, we're going to speak for a little bit, then we're just going to answer whatever question you have because we're that prepared, or we can speak to that degree.
Right.
I feel like it just started out strange, and they're kind of singing, and they brought two Klingon cosplayers up.
Yeah. Was a rap,
which was difficult to hear with the teeth in.
It was indeed difficult. You know, they gave effort, though. It wasn't the you know, Beltran's snark strikes me as rehearsed. What they did, and you know, there was a lot of billing of an amateur makeup guy who has done some fan shows that hooked them up and did the makeup there. For what it was good. It was something we had not seen. It was cute at times. It was unintelligible at times. It was every bit the mixed bag it probably should have been. You know, Hertzler has a very unique voice, and O'Reilly has maybe the largest white space on his eyes I've ever seen of an actor. He referenced that in getting the role as Gowron and doing the, you know, caught in the headlights eye thing, which he even did on stage. So
and you could see the white, yes, from the 28th row that we were in or whatever.
You could. So I got what I wanted from both of them. I got to hear J.J. Hertzler talk. He's got this magnificent voice. Commanding, really, and
but kind of gravelly in a way. Yeah. I mean, I don't know if that naturally happens to your voice later in life, but I suspect, given his age, it's you only get gravelly like that having been at an age, or perhaps in the modern day level of ignorance, where you've smoked for many, many years. Because it's just that wonderful, like, well, we're going. Then I said to him, I will do this. And it's just that wonderful rasp that only the threat of throat cancer can bring.
I don't have a nice voice like you do, Matt. I loathe my voice. If I could pick a voice, though, it would be the voice of J.G. Hertzler. He's done a lot of voice work. And this is a man who's, he's commanding with that, and really respect hearing him. I want to go to one of his town council meetings and just... You know, are we doing anything about the Romulans incurring on the edge of town? Is anything happening with that? And just hear his response. He probably hit it right away. He was talking about, you know, being a politician now and, you know, having to sit through, you know, really kind of advice sessions on how people are litigious and will look to sue politicians and, you know... That's not the Klingon way, man. You just want to go full bear all the time. But we got what I would have asked for, really, with them. I would have just preferred to be able to hear a little bit more of it and make it out.
To the credit of Creation Entertainment that runs the official Star Trek convention circuit. This is now, I think, the third year we've been, or is it perhaps the fourth? I know 3 years ago was LeVar Burton and Frakes.
Four, yeah.
Three or four. Each year it's been different. It's been a different slew. Yes, we saw Lita 2 years in a row do basically the exact same thing. Not that I'm that critical, because you know what? All these people have a one-hour show that they put on. All these people are paid by Creation to do probably 12 shows a year worldwide, or at least probably Creation puts on like 12 to 15 worldwide. Some of them more, you know, some of them do more of the 12 or 15, some of them do less. But Creation has done a good job in these years of getting different people in there. I feel like if each year it was this bunch, I wouldn't be that interested in next year. But you know what? We could probably go on the website, if not now, probably in a month or two, and see what are they planning for next April, and be like, oh, wow, gee whiz, Pete, which day do you want to go?
Right. I mean, we chose today, I think, in part because of schedule, but in part because they had the most going on today, and to think, you know, putting down a $25 investment to see Nichelle Nichols and Robert Picardo and the Klingons and that other guy, you know, most people are going to be fine with that.
Yeah.
I mean, referencing the rest of the schedule that they had this weekend, I mean, if we could have gone yesterday, was Kate Mulgrew, who's, you know, having a second act to her career. With Orange is the New Black after being the captain of Voyager. And then Terry Farrell, who was the original Dax on Deep Space Nine. And then the Ferengi. So it was kind of a bigger and a smaller day yesterday. But, you know, I think today we got more bang for the buck.
Yeah, and for those of you listening saying, oh, I wish, like, why don't they have all that stuff on one day, or why don't they have all the headliners in one day? Well, we had general admission tickets. There's also silver level and gold level, and Pete, you and I joke about it. Basically, any time that we drive to a Star Trek convention, we basically rip on Creation, and we never record that. Probably because there's also the flip side. The flip side is Creation spends a bunch of money bringing really good conventions to like 6 or 7 spots in the United States and other conventions in other parts of the country, other parts of the world. Yeah, they get a good bunch of people to come in and do a nice dog and pony show for us all. Credit where credit is due. Creation does a nice job, and if they're going to make some extra money off of people who decide that they're interested to pay for the $400 gold ticket to be able to have an assigned seat in the front half of the room.
And a karaoke party.
And access to karaoke party, and there was a DJ party, yeah, and just a special gold ticket only meet and greet with these two, and so on and so forth. You know what? That's not my cup of tea. I don't value that. But if people value that, you know what? That's a great, that's awesome.
Man.
Yeah.
It's America, and, you know, no one's going to presume to dictate to you how to spend your money. Yeah, it's just not our bag, but that they offer that type of experience.
The last session that we will talk about today was the first one that we were at, which was Robert Picardo, of course, the actor who played the Doctor on Voyager. His picture was Robert Picardo as holographic Doctor, which I thought was interesting. I wondered if that was maybe like a Doctor Who thing, like, don't call him the Doctor, but then that's how he was billed, that was the character's name, but
right.
Anyhow, he probably had the most polished act of the four,
yeah.
And I felt bad he didn't have more people in the room, but I think that's also part of it, too, that Creation makes the best schedule they can make, and they want to make the full-day experience and whatnot. Pete, what from Robert Picardo would you like to discuss first?
Well, I had seen him way back in the 1990s, very early on in the Voyager run, up at a similar convention, a larger convention in Boston. So it was not new for me to see him up close. The guy's a pro's pro. He's had a lengthy career, either being a regular on Voyager or at China Beach. And then, you know, he's been in movies. He's done, you know, the interspace thing with Martin Short, you know, and he'll pop on your show. He'll pop up on Supernatural for one episode.
He referenced having left New York in 1979 to go find work in Hollywood, having worked on Kojak with Telly Savalas, which by his recounting was the only ongoing TV series in New York at the time. But like, so you're going back to the 70s, he's a professional actor, getting work, and not, you know, as spear-holding Roman number two, like a speaking role on Kojak, okay, and then he goes out to conquer Hollywood, and there he still is now.
Yeah, and just a great guy. I was particularly impressed early on. He came out, and he was auctioning a couple things off because he had ridden down from Brooklyn with a friend who is a Catholic priest and, you know, was going to do the guy a solid and raise some money for his diocese. And then he auctioned off something else for the diocese that he attends in Los Angeles. So, you know what? Some convictions from an artist always make an impression on me, apart from the fact that I am Roman Catholic.
He also told a fantastically told story of his cameo in Star Trek First Contact. And I mean, I won't recount it in full detail now, but essentially he had, what I appreciated most was he had the beats down, because it went like this. He suggested to someone, wouldn't it be great if the holographic doctor was in the new Star Trek movie because they have a new Enterprise? And here's the rationale, because it's a new ship and so on and so forth.
You know what I don't understand, you know, and that became the refrain.
Yeah.
You know what I wonder?
Yeah, it would start with, what I don't understand is, yeah. And then he would go the whole spiel about the holographic doctor, and it would conclude with the other person saying,
That's really interesting.
And then with each retelling, when he would tell the next person, it got shorter. So he'd say, you know what I don't understand? Then I would talk about the doctor, and they'd say, that's interesting. And then it ended with, you know what I don't understand? And I'd be told, that's interesting. And then, of course, he gets it, and it's, you know, it was a nicely told anecdote. And darn it, what I want out of these people is not go immediately to questions and let the fans dictate whatever. And some of the fan questions are great, don't get me wrong.
Right.
Show up there with a little act to wow me about your life. And if you want to wow me with a Telly Savalas story, or you want to wow me with your religious conviction and doing a quick little auction, or you want to wow me with a funny little story about how you got a role in a movie, or your craft. You know, we heard Gates McFadden last year talk at length about her passion for teaching acting and choreography and so on and so forth. Do that. Don't just go straight to, oh, I can't, when's the guy going to ask me what my favorite episode was?
Yeah, I mean, do we know if this is one he carts out at every convention? We don't. But there was a polish to it. Not in I need to entertain these people way, but there was a genuine nature to it. It was cute. He just did a good job, and you know, of everybody we saw today, he's the one I'd want to sit and have a beer with. And I think that tells the test.
Absolutely. Absolutely. He seems like such a nice guy. I think they were, let's see. I think somebody else kind of thanked the fans. Well, Nichelle Nichols was saying, this is all because of you. This is all because of you. Picard, I think, was the most plain spoken about it and the most direct, which he came out and said, thank you, everyone. And they're applauding. He says, no, really, my youngest daughter just graduated college. Thank you all for helping me put her through college. Because, you know, I mean, the acting life is not one I would want to have, because you're perpetually saying no, or hearing no and being told goodbye, whether it's at the end of a 7-year run of Star Trek Voyager or an audition that you hardly made it through the door. You got an audition, thank you very much, and you know you just didn't nail that, you had an off day. So for him to kind of say, we're all in this kind of symbiotic relationship here, but just so you know, here's what I did. I was a good dad, and I helped my kids out, his kids go to college. I don't know, there was a genuineness to it that you want to see out of these people.
There was, and, you know, that comes across, and people take note of that. And, you know, the piece I'll close with was of his BS detector, you know. And no sooner had he mentioned his BS detector had the microphone created some feedback. So he passed by it a couple more times unintentionally at moments not too far after that, and it went off again to the point where he was questioning, oh, is Beltron behind stage? You know, but it was fun, it was witty, the guy is quick, he's cute as far as the material he works with, and, you know, yeah, save the best for first, and save the best to talk about him here last.
Well stated, Pete. I think now's a good time to remind people that if they want to follow you on Twitter, how can they do so?
Well, nearly 3,100 followers, and I'm grateful for each and every one of you. Can't be wrong. You can find me on Twitter at Peter, P-I-E-T-E-R, J, K-E-T-E-L-A-A-R, K-E-T-E-L-A-A-R.
On Twitter, I am personally Looking Back Lost. You can always be in touch with both of us on the podcast by tweeting at Fantastic Geek. That's fantastic with a P-H. You can leave a comment on FantasticGeek.com or email FantasticGeek@gmail.com. With that, Pete, I know that obviously back to this pop culture feed, we'll have plenty of S.H.I.E.L.D. stuff in the next 3 weeks. And probably not too long thereafter, we'll kind of maybe do an episode really spelling out what's ahead for the summer for the pop culture podcast feed. I know we have some more Star Trek stuff to look forward to. We have some of the summer movies to look forward to, certainly Guardians of the Galaxy in August, and some other goodies ahead. So lots of fun times ahead.
Indeed, it's going to be a jam-packed summer, and we're really looking forward to bringing you a lot.
Pete, I will conclude by repeating something that Nichelle Nichols said.
Learn what it is you're talking about. Learn what it is that you don't understand that someone else is talking about. If it's fascinating enough for you to put it down, it's fascinating. It's twice as fascinating. It's fantastic to find out what the heck you're talking about. Whether when you find out about it, you still don't like it, or you come to understand that we're going, we're the people who are going where no man or woman has gone before. And in that life, we have a great deal to be proud of, but a great deal to be responsible for, and responsible to, and to bring up our children understanding that. Thank you.
And I will give you the final word.
Reach for the stars, baby.
What's going on?
This is Nog, played by Aaron Eisenberg.
This is an auction.
He's across the hall signing.
Some memorabilia.
Who's got $20?
This.
20.
Really is like.
20 once.
40.
We'll sell your past to you wholesale.
40 twice.
We'll sell your memories to you.
Sold $40.
I hope it's going to a good cause.
We are joining it midstream, so I have no other assumption than to believe that it is.
Okay.